The dark days are done, and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true, I love you.
Thank you, Doc. Our next guest is one of those rare talents who has something to say and can say it funny. He's a writer-performer on the new Laugh-In and one of the most popular, outspoken, and entertaining personalities on the local news here in Los Angeles. He's won a half a dozen Emmys as a film critic and host of his own shows. Let's welcome Mr. John Barber, right over there.
Thank you, and good evening, folks. The first voice you heard was my in-house singer, Sarita. Just a fabulous singer, fabulous voice. The song was Sunny, and the backup trio, the immortal, one of the great jazz musicians, jazz guitarists in America, Joe Pass, who did a couple of albums also with Ella Fitzgerald. And then the other voice you heard, probably the entertainer of the century, Frank Sinatra. And this voice is John Barber. It's 5 p.m. here in Las Vegas on August the 10th. And I welcome you all in for what's going to be a really, really interesting hour. You know, it's 3.5 days since the so-called Republican debates, where that song should have been sent in the clouds. And the more I see in the media since, and the more I hear people talking, you'd think the only thing going on in the world was Trump's war against women. It brings to mind Mark Twain, my very favorite dead writer, who said, "The more I see of people, the more I like my dog." In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to one of my favorite live writers about overpopulation and its control. And after watching and hearing what I have listened to and heard for the last days, I'm not so sure that viciously and secretly culling the herd of sheep is not such a bad idea. And in the debates, all those constant references to the Bible. I'm telling you, it was mental Abu Ghraib. It was torture. It was preparation H for the mind, making intelligent thought shrink. Folks, I love to read. I am surrounded by thousands of books and finding almost nothing stimulating regularly to watch anymore on television. I scurry to them frequently. I have one by a nun. Her name is Sister Carita. I interviewed her at the height of the Vietnam War. Unlike her pope and church, she opposed that war. Her book is called To Believe in God. And my very favorite quote of hers in that book is this, quote, "To believe in God is to have the deep, abiding faith that somewhere, someone is not stupid," unquote. And the truth is, even if you believe in God, which fortunately for my mental health, I don't, you have to admit when it comes to books, for over 5,000 years, the four books of the apocalypse are and have been the Koran, the Talmud, the Bible, and Das Kapital. You cannot name one other book that has screwed up mankind's mind in the world more than those, which only proves that even the best of do-gooders does more harm than good. And another author I read often, and thank God for, is my guest, who does nothing but good and writes even better. Folks, over the last 100 years, absolutely nothing changed America and the world like the murder of President John Kennedy. Following that life-changing horror, the most important three wise men who kept the light of truth shining on the real facts and the perpetrators are District Attorney Jim Garrison of New Orleans, who struggled to bring someone to trial, Mark Lane, whose rush to judgment which was refused publication in America because it revealed the legal shabbiness and shadiness of their Warren report. And a man, my guest tonight, who every day still continues to shine that light of truth even brighter, a journalist and writer to whom I personally and this country owe a very huge debt. His best-selling Crossfire was the foundation, along with Garrison's book of the movie JFK. His truth-telling talents, fortunately for us, also shine lights in all the other dark corners of our society, American politics, corporations, and media, in such bestsellers as Rule by Secrecy, The Trillion-Dollar Conspiracy, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, and Our Occulted History. And to tell you how good a writer and researcher he is, when his new book, Population Control, How Corporate Owners Are Killing Us, came out, free copies, as you well know, are sent to the country's book critics for review. Some of these critics were so impressed and enthused by it, they went out and bought their own copies for their own friends, which I hardly suggest you all do. After the show, I could not have done the Garrison tapes or the follow-up, The Last Word on the Assassination, without him. And people hungry for the truth could not see those truths or get by without my guest, Jim Mars. Jim, thank you so much for being here. And your book is absolutely, absolutely fabulous.
Well, thank you, John. I'm almost embarrassed here because I think of myself simply as fulfilling my obligation when I pledged back in the university to be a journalist. Okay, I'm back there in journalism department 101. I was actually taught back in the days of the old Republic that I was supposed to look behind the facile statements of the corporate world and the propagandist word of government spokesman and find out what's really going on and tell it to the public and let them make up their mind about how they want to deal with it. And hey, John, fool that I was, I really thought that's what I was supposed to be doing.
Well, in those days, it was obvious there were just unbelievably terrific, encouraging, inspiring journalists on the air like Edward R. Murrow. There were just bunches of them, even Alastair Cook, the Englishman, who would shine those lights on people. And then you had those great movies. What you just said sort of reminds me of something Jim Garrison said when I asked him, because he was very conservative. He was not aligned to any political party. He was a former FBI agent. He was in the military. And I said to him, Mr. Garrison, because he came, as you know, to his own investigation. He first believed the Warren Report for 3 years, but then he came to his own investigation quite accidentally. And when I asked him how he ever thought with this background he could ever take on the federal government without missing a beat, he said, John, I guess as a kid I saw one too many Frank Capra movies. And that sounds like you. But you know, when I look at your book, I must tell you, first of all, if there were a Pulitzer Prize for research, you would be the first recipient for this book. Every single page is a Wikipedia of absolutely wonderful information. So my first question, I have scores and scores of notes, and I hope we get to them all. But my first question, I guess, Jim, would be coming right off the basis of the title for the book. You call it Population Control, How Corporate Owners Are Killing Us. Now, the question to you would be, is the killing of the population a deliberate plot by a small cabal, if you call them the Bilderbergers or whatever anybody would call them? Is it a plot that is deliberate, or is it a byproduct of corporations like Dow and all these pharmaceuticals and all these agricultural corporations trying to make profits? Is it a byproduct of their greed?
Okay. And to answer simply, Yes, it is a plot, okay? And this is why, by the way, let me preface this by saying this is why it is most important. It is critical. It is vital. It is crucial that people start paying attention to the information that I'm bringing forth in my book, Population Control, because, folks, this has gotten beyond political arguments or philosophical debates. We're talking about self-defense. There are people at the top of the food chain, and they want you dead, okay? And now here's why. Let me explain all this. It all comes back to basic philosophy. Back at the end of the 1800s, the eugenics movement got started. And this was actually started in California, I believe, and then spread across the United States. And by the 1930s, for example, almost all the states had sterilization laws, okay? If you didn't live up to their standard of intelligence or skin color or bone structure, then they considered you just a little bit, you know, they figured you're going to leave a dirty ring around the gene pool. And so, in fact, this whole eugenics movement, which was started by the Harrimans and their proteges, the Bush family, the Rockefellers, all of these wealthy elites, okay, it spread. And by the 1930s or mid-30s, it was picked up by the Nazis over in Germany. And they carried it to its logical extreme. We have some people here. We don't think they fit in. We don't like them very much. So we need to cut them out of our society. Simplest thing to do is round them up and kill them. And so we had World War II and the Holocaust. And, of course, they killed Jews, they killed gypsies, they killed anybody that stood in their way. Well, so eugenics kind of fell into disrepute. The whole world recoiled and said, oh, my God, you know, you can't just go around killing innocent people. All right? So now the eugenicists today, and they're still there in these blue blood families and in these same bloodlines. And today, they are the owners and controllers of these multinational corporations that are now run the United States and are tempted to run the world. Now, John, let me quickly make a caveat here. When I'm talking about corporate owners, I'm talking about the people who control these corporations, not necessarily just the officers. You can go to big oil companies and big food companies. Agribusiness, and you find presidents and vice presidents in these corporations, and as you said, and it's very true, their basic agenda is to just uphold the bottom line, keep the profit line up. And a lot of them are good, honest, hardworking people. They probably, many of them, have Harvard business degrees, but they are simply administrators. They make sure that the corporation runs very efficiently and that the profit line stays up. No, it's the people who control the policies of these corporations. And it could be the chairman of the board, it might be just one of the directors, but predominantly it is the majority stockholder or shareholder. Now, a lot of people have the mistaken belief that you have to own 51% or more of a company to control it. But if you stop and think, if you own only 10% of a company, but no one else owns any more than that, then you are the controlling stockholder and you can make the decisions. And these are the people that we're talking about. And since they, well, to give an example, this also includes the royal families in Europe. And, for example, Prince Philip of the Windsor.
I was waiting for you to get to Prince Philip. And then also, after you mentioned that, because I could not believe that somebody would say that publicly who held that kind of office in the world. And then after you do that, get to the business. Since he said that publicly, it's also printed publicly in your brilliant introduction to the book about the Georgia Guidestone. So get right back, Prince Philip.
Okay, well, quickly, we'll jump to the Georgia Guidestones,
okay,
which is a monument in Georgia, and it's all kind of mysterious. It was all commissioned by a guy named Christian who admitted that was not his real name, and it is seen by many as a monument to the New World Order, okay, and it gives a whole list of guidelines that they said is necessary for a more rational world. And the very first admonition on the Georgia Guidestones pretty well sums up the attitude of these wealthy ruling elite, and it states, maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature. Well, doesn't that sound warm and fuzzy? And that's great. And again, they think that that's what would make for a more perfect world. And again, we're back to the...
Just one second. That's very true, and it's like the Ten Commandments of the rulers of this planet. But some of the other tenets printed on those Guidestones seemed to make sense, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, it is a perfectly rational thing, and of course you can always... the other ones are like guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. Well, who can argue with that? You need unite humanity under one living language, okay? Rule passion, faith, tradition, and all things with tempered reason. You know, it all kind of sounds like a page out of Karl Marx or somebody. But anyway, protect nations with fair laws.
You know, this is,
but let's go back to the maintain humanity at 500 million. Well, the problem here, John, as you well know, is that right now today there's like 7.5 billion people on the planet. So wait a minute. So do they think that that's entirely too many? Yeah. Again, let's go to Prince Philip. And he stated, human population growth is probably the single most serious long-term threat to survival. It is, if it isn't controlled voluntarily, it will be controlled involuntarily by an increase in starvation, disease, and war. And just to show you that he's really serious about this, at another point, and this is the one I think you were referring to, he says, in the event that I am reincarnated, I would like to return as a deadly virus in order to contribute something to solve overpopulation. All right.
Well,
now, he is simply verbalizing.
Saying it while he's alive, Jim, makes him a live virus. And
yeah,
obviously, he wouldn't be saying that unless he had the support of the mega billionaires, the financiers who run the planet.
Exactly. And, well, you yourself early on, you know, when you talk about if you're living in a big city or you're in Las Vegas, and when I go to Dallas and I get stuck in traffic, you know, it's very easy to fall into this thing about, wow, there's just too damn many people. You know, we need to get rid of a few of these people.
Well, you know, when I was a kid, Jim, and you must remember this too, I could drink water out of a tap, I could drink water out of a stream, and I could breathe air that was invisible. But
that's
not
right.
Any longer.
Hey, I went to work when I was 13 years old in a grocery store, and back then, and I worked my way through everything. I did stocking and checking, and headed the produce department for a while, headed the meat department for a while. I did everything there was there to do. If you'd come in the grocery store when I was there working and said, where's the water, I would have pointed you to the water fountain, okay? Or say, hey, go outside and turn on the hose, you know, the water comes out of there. It's been within my lifetime that all of a sudden there was a part of a shelf, part of an aisle, where there would be some bottled water. And now you go into the big stores, you go to Costco, you go to Walmart, and they got entire aisles filled with bottled water. And that's because, again, this ruling elite are damaging our water through pollution.
There's been a quote, Jim, by the president, the CEO of the Nestle Corporation, that's been all over the internet, and I don't know if it's true or not, but I'm certain that you must know this. The CEO of Nestle's says publicly, as the head of this corporation, that people do not have a right to free water. Is that true?
Oh, yeah, that's true. In fact, another good quote from Andrew Laveris, who's the CEO of Dow Chemical, and he pretty well lays it out. He says, water is the oil of the 21st century. Okay, now we all know the story of oil and how John D. Rockefeller, by the late 1800s, had gained control over almost all of the petroleum production in the world. Well, they're trying to do the same thing now with water. And because the corporations have now bought up the federal government, and we are now seeing a combination of corporate and state power, which is the very dictionary definition of fascism, they are now passing laws saying you can't have any rights to your own water. They have prosecuted people in the Northwest for capturing rainwater or runoff water, and that's because they want to get a total lock on the water. And by the way, you know, we might survive a few days without food, but nobody can go very long without some water.
Have these people who've been arrested, have they been actually fined or convicted for such stupid violations?
Yes.
And why is there no?
And it's going to get worse because, hey, look at California. They just recently passed water restrictions there, 25%. Decrease in the water because they're running out of water in California. And they've already have proposed, it's not in effect yet, but they've already proposed fines of up to $500 if they find you misusing water. In fact, what this has led to, if it wasn't so serious, it'd really be kind of funny, is that I've seen stories where out in California now, there are companies making money by coming around and painting your dead grass green so that you look like you have a green lawn, but you're not misusing it. You're not using the water.
I've listened to a lady twice on rents, and thank God I get to listen to you once a month on Jeff's show. But this lady said that she was convinced that the drought in California, which is hard to imagine, is deliberate, and that there is no water shortage because of the water that is deep under the ground. Is that true?
Well, I'm not sure if that's true or not. Number one, I do believe there is some circumstantial and suggestive evidence that the drought in California is artificial. This is what this chemtrailing is all about. This is what geoengineering, weather engineering is all about. And then there are reports that the aquifers under California are depleting. And that, in other words, they're already, for the last few years, they've been operating, using up their own groundwater in the aquifers, and that they are depleting and that they indeed may run out.
So, I saw on the news the other day that it was 145 degrees in Tehran, and some Iranians were saying that they felt it was the American military and the American government geoengineering the atmosphere. Is that possible?
Well, I was right. I wrote stories about the developing war using weather all the way back in the 70s when I was working for the newspaper. And if they were working on it then, you can figure out how advanced they probably got with it today. There was a story in U.S. News and World Report a few years ago that really caught my eye because it was written as a very positive story. It was, hey, we don't have to worry about deadly hurricanes anymore because scientists have figured out how to use energy-directed weapons to heat the water and heat the atmosphere at a hurricane and can de-intensify it, can reduce the severity of it, and can heat the water on one side or the other and actually guide it away from land and from population centers. Well, of course, I'm going, boy, that sounds good. But then, hey, wait a minute. If they can do that and reduce the velocity and steer it away, they can also increase velocity and steer it into something.
Do you think, like Katrina,
which suddenly did a 90-degree turn and slammed into New Orleans.
Oh, do you think that some of these energy-directed weapons came about as a result of the government's theft of all of Tesla's secrets and his documents and copyrights
guide? Yeah, it was that, and it was back engineering UFOs. It was all kinds of things that they keep secret from us because, after all, we're just the taxpaying public. We're not supposed to know anything.
Jim, do you think that, I mean, of course, Bush and his administration lied us into Iraq, and ostensibly the reason for that, according to Oliver Stone's movie, Bush, or GW, or whatever he called the film, was that we were going to get to their oil reserves. Do you think, as a byproduct of this, the real reason for going in there might have been depopulation?
Well, that's it, because in my book, Population Control, I quote from a former chief of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and he says, and this was written back in the 70s, he says that, again, he echoing what Prince Philip said, he says, in fact, I can tell you exactly what he says. This was Maxwell Taylor, huh? I'm sure you remember.
Oh, yes, very well.
Former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and also ran the Vietnam War for a while. And he said that in the next century, well, that's now, he says it's going to be necessary to reduce the world's population, mostly in third world countries, using methods such as disease, starvation, and regional wars. Okay, now I ask you, doesn't that sound exactly like what's going on, particularly in sub-Sahara Africa and in the Middle East? And now, see, now they're moving it here. Now they're moving it to us. Fracking, they're destroying the water table. Plus, 70% of the water supplies in the United States are now being fluoridated. That means they put sodium fluoride in the water. Now, sodium fluoride in the 30s was sold as a rat poison. Okay, had a huge skull and crossbones poison all over the containers. Why would anybody want to be putting poison in their water supply? Okay, well, what the Nazis found out was, and this was confirmed by a U.S. Chemist who went over there after the war, and I cite in my book Population Control, he said the Nazis found out that you could put just a little bit of sodium fluoride in a water supply, and the people who drank it would become docile and passive and non-resistant. So they put the water in the concentration camps, and that's why they'd have 20, 30,000 people in a camp with only, you know, a couple hundred guards, and nobody ever successfully broke out. And so now they're putting this same substance in 70% of the water in this country, because somewhere back down the line, they convinced the few officials of the American Dental Association that a little bit of sodium fluoride in the water would help reduce cavities, but only in children between the ages of 6 and 12 years old. In fact, if you look at your toothpaste, if it's got fluoride in it, look on the back and it says, don't swallow this. If it's swallowed, contact the Centers for Disease Control, poison division, you know?
That brings us directly, Jim, to other substances that you catalog in this amazing, amazing book, Population Control, and How the Corporate Owners Are Killing Us. Some of the other substances, one of them being aspartame. Now, the Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, I believe was the one who fought against the government when the government agencies, the Federal Drug Commission, when they declined to give approval to aspartame, saying that it was a poison. And Donald Rumsfeld, I believe, was the man, the lawyer, who got that overturned. Is that true? And then tell us more about some of these other substances that are in our foods now.
Well, it is true about aspartame. The federal certification people within the FDA were not going to certify it because of several problems, being a possible causing cancer, only being one of them. But Donald Rumsfeld, who then was with the transition team when Ronald Reagan came into office, saw to it that one of his guys were placed in as the head of the FDA, and all of a sudden then, and he told people there within, he was an officer of Searle, I believe it was, that produced this aspartame, which was a sugar substitute, okay? You'll find it anytime you see something, sugar-free or diet, if you see that, read it carefully. You'll probably find it's got aspartame in it, although recently they've changed the name because of all the adverse publicity. They've changed the name to sucralose, all right? But if you see sucralose or aspartame, you know it's in there. And initially, they only got it certified for the use in diet colas and drinks, okay? But before this hand-picked head of the FDA left office, he okayed it for all kinds of foods. And today, you find it in just almost all sugar-free products. And that's the thing that really grabs me, is that people who are worrying about their weight, okay, and that's almost everybody in this country, because the food we're getting tastes great and it's filling, but it is not nutritious. All right, that's another whole thing I talk about in my book. But they turn and try to find a sugar substitute, and they're putting this poison in your system, because aspartame it is known that it at temperatures of higher than 86 degrees it changes molecular form and becomes formaldehyde. Well, you know, what's the normal human body temperature? 98.6. So when you put it in your system, it's going to really, really mess you up. And enough of it has actually caused all kinds of health problems.
Well, but I just hope that in the next couple of years, science advances to the point where they can clone Jim Mars, because we need a lot of you. We're going to take a very brief break right now, Jim. And when we come back, I want to get to something that, again, I never saw as a kid. And that was any kind of ad for any kind of pharmaceutical. We're going to take a brief break right now, and we'll be back with the incomparable Jim Mars.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Hi, I'm Richard Valzer, and this is the great BBS Radio.
Thank you for that smile upon your face, oh sunny.
This is John Barber. You may remember me as the co-host, producer, and creator of Real People, America's first reality show, or most recently as the writer-director of what's been called the definitive documentary on JFK's murder, The Last Word on the Assassination. Now I'm doing a show every other Monday from 5 to 6 Pacific Time on BBS. You'll hear provocative views, unreported news, and film reviews from me, with outstanding guests and you. Join me on John Barber's World.
Those of you who have an ongoing interest in the JFK assassination might want to know about this. TV producer John Barber. He put together a dream team of JFK researchers, including Coast regular Jim Mars and world-class JFK writers Dick Russell and Joan Mellon. They all got together at UNLV in front of a live audience. They had a screening of Barber's terrific and I'd say historic film based on interviews with prosecutor Jim Garrison of New Orleans. And then after the film was shown, the experts all talked about the latest JFK theories and evidence. It's now out on a DVD. Terrific stuff. I'm George Knack, Coast to Coast AM.
I'd like to thank George Knapp for that unsolicited review of The Last Word on the Assassination. And if you get a chance, if you go to Amazon and you search The Last Word on the Assassination, you'll find dozens and dozens of unsolicited reviews that came, amazing reviews that came from people who bought the DVD and then went back and bought it again. And then while you're up there, if you want a little smile occasionally, I have a little book up there called John Barber's First Facebook Book Uncensored. It's sort of like chicken soup for the funny bone. You can open it almost any place, and there's something that'll make you laugh or something that'll make you angry. I want to thank you again if you go up there and take a look at that. We are back now with just one of the most amazing people in this country. I just don't know how he finds and stores all this information in his head without his head first exploding. And then he puts it on the page in this amazing book, Population Control, How Corporate Owners Are Killing Us. I just don't know how Jim Mars does it. Jim, again, you're be absolutely complimented on the very readable writing for such a really tough subject. And again, the research is impeccable. So to the business of psychiatric drugs, you have so much to say about it in the book. My son's wife is now a therapist, psychologist, and her only practice in Hollywood is treating people who are addicted to legal prescription drugs, and she says she hasn't got room for them all, and she'll never run out of clients. How did this happen?
Well, if I tell you that the first leading cause of death among Americans is heart attack, heart disease, I'm sure that you wouldn't blink an eye. If I tell you the second leading cause of death to Americans today is stroke and rather cancer, you still wouldn't buy that. It wouldn't bother you. You'd understand, yeah, that's true. But what if I tell you the third leading cause of death to Americans today is conventional medical treatment? Okay? And we're not talking about illegal drugs or misused drugs. We're talking about, according to an article published a few years back in the Journal of the American Medical Association, there are approximately 12,000 yearly deaths from unnecessary surgery, 7,000 deaths from medication errors in hospital, 20,000 deaths from other errors in hospital, 80,000 deaths from infections acquired in hospitals, and another 106,000 deaths attributed to FDA-approved and correctly prescribed medicines. And this does not include inappropriate use of legal drugs. It's incredible. And again, this is why they're killing us. But in a more direct manner, you mentioned the psychiatric drugs. Every time there's one of these mass shootings, or particularly a school shooting, and everybody is just, you know, raises the cry of alarm, as well they should. Those are terrible things. But the media can only talk about guns. Guns, guns, guns. Take the guns away and everything will be all right. Well, wait a minute. Excuse me. John, I grew up in Texas. We took guns to school, all right? I knew plenty of guys had rifles, shotguns in the racks of their pickup truck. And for target shooting or hunting after school, we took guns in the school occasionally. Hey, look at this. Here's my new 22, you know. Nobody shot anybody. The reason for all of these school shootings and these mass murders are the psychiatric drugs. Every single one of them, almost without exception, and the only reason I'd say there might be exceptions is because on some of the mass shootings, like Mr. Cho of Virginia Tech, they have sealed his medical records. So we can't prove that what he was on, but it was mentioned in the mass media that he was under psychiatric care, so you know he's on one of those SSRI drugs.
Jim, excuse me just a second. Did his family or families of the victims in many of these cases, have they successfully brought lawsuits against the drug companies with massive awards about which we hear nothing?
No, you can't sue the drug companies. And that's because back in the, again, during the Reagan years, in 1986, Congress passed the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, which absolves any of the pharmaceutical corporations from any liability if their drugs cause a harm. And, of course, we're kind of skipping. I think this is also true with the psychiatric drugs, but we're particularly talking about now we're into the vaccines. This is why they created the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, which is a federal program. So if you feel like you've been damaged by one of the drugs of the pharmaceutical corporations, you cannot sue the pharmaceutical people, the manufacturers, but you can go to this injury claims court in the federal program, and you can if you hire a lawyer, and if you spend years, and if you spend thousands of dollars trying to prove up your medical complaint, which that pretty well leaves out most people, then you can occasionally get compensation from the government for damages caused by these vaccines, in this case, or any other drug. Now, what's interesting is that, again, in California, they now passed a law stating that every kid must have a vaccination. There's no exemptions, all right? And yet, they say because they're perfectly safe, and yet, on this Victims Compensation Fund, as of today, the government has paid out over $3 billion to people who have gone through that stringent program and proven that their kids have been damaged by the vaccines. By the way, and recently in England, the UK, they've paid out $90 million to about 800 families whose children were harmed by the swine flu vaccine. So my thing, and I think you'll go with me, is that we can argue over the efficiency of these vaccines, but I think if we're going to be calling ourselves a free people, we should not have forced mandatory shots.
The business of vaccines, of course, brings us to billionaire, multi-billionaire Bill Gates, who seems to be spending an enormous amount of money developing vaccines and delivering them and injecting them in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that this is in any part some kind of deliberate plan, or is he really sincere in trying to help those people?
I think he's sincere in what he's saying, but listen to what he says. Here's one of his quotes. He said, "The world has," and this was some time back, it's more now, 7.5 now, but "the world has 7.5 billion people, and that's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 to 45%. 10 to 15%. Yeah, so see, he's on board. When he talks about let's have more vaccines, you know, what he's really saying is we're going to reduce the world population.
And okay, how does somebody, for example, they say that Oprah Winfrey is now part of the Bilderberger Group. And I remember years ago when Jesse Ventura became that independent governor of Minnesota, he sort of offhandedly mentioned that when he took office, there to greet him were a half a dozen Central Intelligence Agency agents to interview him. He has never expanded on that, but the question I would have for him or anybody is, what business does a Central Intelligence Agency have in interviewing the new governor of a sovereign independent state?
Well, it's real simple. They're there to debrief him and to find out, you know, if he's going to go along with this new world order plan. Obviously, Jesse Ventura didn't give them the answers they wanted, so he was only a one-term governor. He's out, and now he's doing good to have a TV program. But Bill Gates obviously passed the test because now he's out there pushing for vaccinations all around the world. And one of the things you'll find out in my book is that just last year in 2014, UNICEF and the World Health Organization injected 2 million Kenyan women with a vaccine that was found out later, studied in a laboratory, and found to have a sterilization chemical in it. So they are surreptitiously trying to sterilize people in the third world, and they're probably trying to do it here through the additives to vaccines and through bad food, bad air, bad water. All you have to do is work on the human immunization system and then let nature take its course.
What would you say to some Americans, some very prominent Americans, who feel, and this happens mostly in my neighbor, minority neighborhoods and in the ghettos, a woman who is not married has 5 or 6 illegitimate children, and she is being supported by the state, meaning supported by taxpayers like you and myself. What would you say to those prominent people who say that after the second illegitimate child, these women should be sterilized instantly?
Well, again, from a cold, rational standpoint, I think that makes sense, okay? The problem is, and this comes back to the whole basic question, if we want to reduce the world's population from 7.5 billion down to 500 million, the big question is, what's supposed to happen to the other 7 billion? And more importantly, who makes the decisions on who's going to go and who gets to stay? And that's the problem there. If you ever set up a system that is requires mandatory sterilization like they did in Nazi Germany, then where do you stop? And you saw in Nazi Germany, it didn't stop with the mentally and physically infirmed. It ended up with just anybody they didn't like. So
you know what that leads to, Jim? I hate to say it. It leads to an immunity to human suffering. And so that it makes it easier if you can sterilize somebody because they've had two children, then you can somehow kill them.
Well, for my money, I think there should be some efforts to try to control populations, but it all should be voluntary. I'll give you a good example. I remember years ago reading a story that in India, which has an overpopulation problem, or at least they perceive it as such, that they were offering free transistor radios to any male who would come in and voluntarily get a vasectomy. Hey, I think that's okay, all right? Nobody's forcing them to do it, but if they want the radio and they're willing to get the vasectomy, so much the better. And I know when I was in China, I found out that over there, of course, they're under a very tight totalitarian regime, but if you have one child, then you get some assistance from the state, but if you have two, then the assistance you're getting from the state is cut, okay? And we should do the same thing here because there's just entirely too many people making a living off of having children.
That's entirely different from when I was a kid. In Canada, they used to have a thing called a baby bonus. The more children you have, the more money the government gave you, but maybe Canada, with its smaller population, was willing to do that.
Well, it all comes back to how everything's changed around. Prior to the Industrial Revolution, in fact, actually probably prior to about 1950 or 60 here in my lifetime, you had to have a bunch of children because, number one, infant mortality was pretty high. If you had four kids, you know, you're lucky if two of them lived. Number two, we were a predominantly rural nation. And you had to have, the more kids you had, the more hands you had to run the farm, you know. But with industrialization and with everybody moving in the city, we just don't have to have that many kids anymore.
Well, you also have a really, really interesting chapter on the God Syndicate. Exactly what is the God Syndicate?
Well, it's the three largest money-making commodities in the world: guns, oil, and drugs. G.O.D., the God Syndicate. And, not surprisingly, all three of these are pretty much owned and controlled by these same corporate owners, by these same wealthy and sometimes royal families, and they control all of this, including a lot of the basic mineral resources of this planet. But to me, the greatest irony, for example, on guns, is that according to congressional records, the United States over the past couple of decades has been the arms merchant of the world. We have provided 78%, almost 80% of the arms, and we're talking about small arms, we're talking about rifles and pistols, but also rockets and rocket-propelled grenades and airplanes, tanks, you name it, all kinds of weaponry. It's all, 80% is being supplied by the United States, whereas our so-called enemies, Russia, China, collectively have only produced about 8%, 5 from Russia, 3 from China. Okay,
would you add food to guns, oil, and drugs? And if you would, how did GMOs come about? Why are they approved, or do they seem to be approved in America? And why are some countries in Europe burning the crops that are GMO crops?
Well, because the basic thing on GMOs, which is genetically modified organisms, and, you know, what I'm trying to say here, when you breed, when you interbreed animals and plants and things, that's been going on for centuries. That's not a problem. But with genetically modified organisms, you are crossing species, and that gets really weird. And I think the primary thing is, it's such a new science that no one truly knows what it's going to end up doing to us and to our ecosystem. For example, we now have the problem of bee colony collapse, of all these bee colonies that are disappearing, and they, for the most part, they are more and more looking at these GMO crops that are might be the cause of that. Now, of course, if you knock out one of the vital links in the food chain, you're going to affect the entire food chain. And then as more and more evidence comes to light, it shows that there are inherent dangers in these GMOs. Now, in fact, so other countries, many other countries, have actually banned GMOs. We can't even seem to get a simple law identifying which is a GMO product and which is not. Now, again, back to a simple issue of freedom. Don't you think if you're free, you should be able to know what is in the food you're buying? You know, and if you support GMOs, you don't mind trying them, you don't mind what's going to happen with you, and you want to buy them, that's fine. But if you don't, you should be able to at least know what's in this food that you're buying. And yet, the GMO, Monsanto, some of these food corporations have spent millions and millions of dollars to defeat local referendums on, let's just simply label the GMO. Now, that should tell you something right there. If GMOs were perfectly harmless, they wouldn't have to do this.
It gets right back to what you said about depopulation. Who makes the decisions? Well, obviously, we do not make those decisions. And what I can't get over, I mean, we're going to have 16 more months of these just head-thumping, meaningless debates. The 99% elect the president, but only the 1% get to select the president. There
exactly.
is something wrong with our system. And you know, at the very beginning of the debate, which is an absolute outrage, that guy with that looked like he went to the boot black to get his hair polished before he asked the first question. And the first question is, do you swear now, if you are not the candidate, to support the Republican candidate in 2016 and not run as an independent? Now, I must tell you, the only candidate around who seems to be saying anything about anything that matters is Bernie Sanders. But Bernie Sanders also said early that he would support the Democratic nominee. And I am telling my friends who are running around putting his bumper stickers on their cars, I'm telling you, he's going to crash. He is the Democrats' Ron Paul. Now, yeah. Is he put out there deliberately like Ron Paul, who put his tail between his legs and ran off, and he's doing some newsletter now? I mean, do they do this deliberately to us?
That's a good question. And the thing is, though, they've been doing this back all the way through elections that I remember. Remember George Wallace? Remember Ross Perot? You know, every time, in fact, you go back to the creation of the Federal Reserve System, which is finally and now under some attack, and they, at least Ron Paul and others say, at least we need to audit it, which of course we do. But that goes back to the election of 1912. Howard Taft was running as a Republican and had vowed publicly never to support a banking bill, which would have been the Federal Reserve bill, okay? And his opponent, Democrat Woodrow Wilson, was kind of lackluster, and all the polls showed that Taft was going to be elected. So what did the banksters do? They got Teddy Roosevelt to run on a third-party ticket, the Bull Moose Party, and they split the votes between Roosevelt and Taft, and Woodrow Wilson got in, and one of the first things he did was create the Federal Reserve System that was pushed through on a Christmas Eve when most people were out of Washington, didn't know what was going on.
Well, that brings us, we have about 5 minutes left, and this is something I want to touch on. It's just the outstanding closing chapter of your book has a question mark on it. And the question mark follows the coming collapse. Myself and just millions of others Americans suffered a huge calamity in 2008 and 2009. And fortunately, I was well enough off to survive, and I guess maybe smart enough to survive. And you quote some really, really interesting stuff in that last chapter. And while I'm not a fan of Alan West, I must tell you the quotes that you picked from Alan, I thought were quite brilliant. Would you like to talk about that?
Well, actually, I quote from several different people, and all I want to say is, hey, buy my book, read the quotes. But I will say this. My editors are always going, when I try to quote somebody, say I try to quote John Barber. And they're always, well, who's that? Who's he? What's his credentials? You know, and this really bothers me because it's almost like, well, if you have a bunch of initials behind your name, you know, you must be some kind of expert. And if you don't, then you must be a nobody. And why should we listen to your quote? And I want to just scream because, hey, if Adolf Hitler comes back to life and tells you the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, does it make him wrong because he's Hitler? You know, never mind who's saying all this. I mean, that does play a big part. If somebody's saying that nuclear power is great, then obviously you want to check and find out that, well, maybe he's a member of the Atomic Industrial Forum, so he's a pro-industry guy. But if somebody says something and it makes sense and it's internally consistent, then who should care who's saying it, you know? And
the
same thing you
right.
mentioned about Alan West. I'm not a huge, huge fan of Alan West, but some of those things he said were really, really good and made a lot of sense.
Now,
and that's why I quoted him.
In doing the research, especially for that chapter, because there are lots of people that you have deeply researched and quoted in this, do you think there's going to be a repeat soon of 2008 and 2009?
A collapse?
Yeah, because I see in Las Vegas, and I do not understand this, Lake Mead is down by a half, which means there's going to be an intense water shortage. As a matter of fact, they're
yep.
spending $1 billion to put a pipe underneath it, like a drain, like on the bathtub, and yet all around me I see new construction. How can they support
right.
this, and who buys this?
Well, people, I don't know, people are pretty nuts. You know, California, we mentioned earlier, is having such a drought problem. And then here, back the first of the summer, I was in Palm Springs, and they took me to the Palm Springs Golf Club. And, oh, man, what a beautiful, you know, green greens and fairways, and the water sprinklers are going, you know, all over the place. And then I find out that is one of only 125 golf courses just in Palm Springs. And that's out in the desert. So you put 125 golf courses in the desert and then wonder why you're running out of water?
Well, do you think, though, really?
But back to the collapse.
Yeah.
It's like the old line that if everybody tells you you don't look very good, don't look very well, maybe you ought to sit down or lie down. Okay? When everybody, and I mean everybody, even these very conservative and bullish stock analysis people.
Jim Rogers.
Yeah, all these guys. And they're all saying, you know, buy ammunition and tomato seeds. Then, you know, maybe you better start thinking about what's going to be happening over the next few months.
Well, FEMA, in the coming collapse, you have that list of stuff that FEMA tells you to buy to survive, and it's got about 15 items. And one of the items it does not mention is guns.
Of course. Well, the thing is, it's this simple. What good is it going to be if you stockpile food and water and medicine and clothing and means of keeping you warm and cool if somebody can come in with a gun and take it away from you?
Well, I must tell you, Jim, you are an absolute, absolute gem. And I'm so glad there are people like you around because it makes me feel that I'm not entirely alone here, you know?
No, hey, there's plenty of thinking people out here, and probably most of them are listening to your program. Otherwise, they'd be pretty smart, and they wouldn't be listening to your program. The problem with all of us is that because the media is so controlled by six multinational corporations and they control everything we see and hear, that most thinking people like you and I, and probably most everybody listening to this broadcast, we just think we're alone with it. We're the only ones who can think straight, but that's not true. I think we're the majority, but you're not going to hear about this in the media because the media is very tightly controlled.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And anybody out there who wants their brain to survive, they must get Jim's book. It's called Population Control, How Corporate Owners Are Killing Us. And Jim, where can they get it, and how can they get to your site?
Okay, well, my site's easy enough, jimmars.com. That's Jim Mars, Mars with two R's, M-A-R-R-S.com. You can get my books off my website or off Amazon or off any bookstore.
Well, the two R's stand for really right on. Jim, thank you.
Thank you, John.
So much for being here. You have a great week, and we must do this again.
You bet.
Thank you so much, and thank you for listening, folks. I'll see you in a week with a very special program with one of the great comedians America ever produced. His name, Gallagher. Good night.
You're my spark of nature's fire. You're my sweet, complete desire. A sunny, 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 I love you.